Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the fourth chapter of the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe, and continuing with text 40 today. Nadati kvachit utkanto vilajo nityanti kvachit kvachit tad bhavana yuktas tanmayo nuchakaraha nadati kvachit utkanto vilajo nityanti kvachit kvachit tad bhavana yuktas tanmayo nuchakaraha nadati kvachit uktanto vilajo nityanti kvachit kvachit tad bhavana yuktas tanmayo nuchakaraha. Ladies, please. Nadati exclaims loudly, addressing the Lord, O Krishna, kvachit, sometimes, uktanta, being anxious, vilajaha, without shame, nrityanti, he dances, kvachit, sometimes, kvachit, sometimes. Tadbhavana, with thoughts of Krishna. Uktaha, being absorbed. Tatmayaha, thinking as if he had become Krishna. Anuchakara, imitated. Ha, indeed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sometimes upon seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prahlad Maharaj would loudly call in full anxiety. He sometimes lost his shyness and jubilation and began dancing in an ecstasy. And sometimes, being fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, he felt oneness and imitated the pastimes of the Lord. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj sometimes felt that the Lord was far away from him, and therefore called him loudly. When he saw that the Lord was before him, he was fully jubilant. Sometimes, thinking himself one with the Supreme, he imitated the Lord's pastimes, and in separation from the Lord, he would sometimes show symptoms of madness. These feelings of a devotee would not be appreciated by impersonalists. One must go further and further into spiritual understanding. The first realization is impersonal Brahman, but one must go still further to realize Paramatma and eventually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is worshipped by the transcendental feelings of a devotee in a relationship of Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, or Madhurya. Here the feelings of Prahlad Maharaj were in the mellow of Vatsalya, filial love and affection. As a child cries when left by his mother, when Prahlad Maharaj felt that the Lord was away from him, he began to cry, Nadati. Again, a devotee like Prahlad sometimes sees that the Lord is coming from a long distance to pacify him, like a mother responding to a child, saying, My dear child, do not cry, I am coming. Then the devotee, without being ashamed due to his surroundings and circumstances, begins to dance, thinking, Here is my Lord is coming. Thus the devotee, in full ecstasy, sometimes imitates the pastimes of the Lord, just as the cowherd boys used to imitate the behavior of the jungle animals. However, he does not actually become the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj achieved the spiritual ecstasies described herein by his advancement in spiritual understanding. Om Yanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalaka Chakshur Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Namang Vishnu Paraya Krishna Sagudale Shimate Paladananda Sainthamane Namang Vishnu Paraya Krishna Sagudale Shimate Bhakti Pranta Sainthamane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shuni Vadi Paschyati Adi Shatarane. So, this particular section of the Bhagavatam is describing the exalted position of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj wasn't an ordinary person, neither was he an ordinary devotee. He was an extremely incredible devotee that set such an amazing example that, in fact, devotees have been following in his footsteps for countless millennia. I think it was Prabhupada who said that actually we in this Gaudiya Sampradaya, we aspire to follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. And the reason we aspire for that is because Prahlad Maharaj has the same preaching mood as Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. Prahlad Maharaj said, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not interested in being liberated. I want to stay here in these hellish cities where the ignorance is darkest, to save all these fallen souls. And then once all the fallen souls go back to Godhead, then I'll go back. That's the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. So we also have that same mood. But interestingly, Prahlad Maharaj, he was like this from his very birth, which is something that caused quite a lot of confusion to his father, Hiranyakashipu. Because Hiranyakashipu was just distraught at the fact that his son was a pure devotee of Lord Vishnu. And he was wondering where his son was getting all these ideas from. You know, how is it that my son is a devotee of my worst enemy, my greatest enemy? And so Hiranyakashipu blamed his teachers, you know, Prahlad Maharaj's teachers, and the teachers said, no, no, we have nothing to do with this. We've been instructing your son exactly as he requested. He must have gotten this somewhere else. Actually, it all has to do with Narada Muni. Narada Muni, while Prahlad Maharaj was in the womb of his mother, every day Narada Muni would instruct his mother in the science of Krishna consciousness. And Prahlad Maharaj actually was listening from within the womb. So when he was born already a pure, perfect devotee. Ordinarily, achieving this state of perfection takes going through quite a number of stages. But Prahlad Maharaj, he was already on the platform of prema, showing transcendental ecstasies. Usually it goes through a process which actually, I think Prahlad Maharaj, it's mentioned here in the seventh canto, and it's also mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur actually devoted an entire book to it. It's called the Sri Madhurya Kadambani, where he goes into great detail listing all the various phases of the development of bhakti. So it's mentioned Adau Shraddha. In the beginning there is faith. I actually heard a interesting translation of faith by one of the devotees in our society. He mentioned that it breaks down into two words, Shra and Da. Da means to give, and Shra refers to the heart. So in one sense, you can think of faith as where you're investing your heart, which is actually very significant. You know, what are we investing our hearts in? Some people have great faith in their family. You know, they've really invested a lot of their heart within their family, and they think their family will love them and protect them and carry them through all difficult situations. Where other people have great faith in their nation or great faith in so many different mundane things. But ultimately, what's required is that we invest a little bit of our heart in Krishna. And once that initial faith is there, then what's the consequence of that? Then we get sadhu sangha. We get the association of devotees. And what's the natural consequence of associating with devotees? Bhajana kriya. Because we're associating with devotees, we start to take on their characteristics and activities. So we start picking up different things that they're doing. What is it that they're doing? They're serving the Lord. They're engaging in bhakti yoga. So naturally, we also begin engaging in devotional activities. So in the stage of Bhajana Kriya, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that it's the process of removing the giant boulders that are clogging our heart. You know, our heart is covered with so much dirt. And there's different sizes of the dirt. In the stage of Bhajana Kriya, we're still at the stage of big, like, large rocks and boulders and large obstructions like trees and branches. And the stage of Bhajana Kriya culminates in taking initiation from a bona fide spiritual master and vowing to follow the four regulative principles, namely no illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling, and no intoxication. Those are the four biggest obstructions in the path of bhakti. And after initiation, one progresses to the stage of anartanivritti, or getting rid of unwanted activities. Prabhupada actually gives an interesting translation of anartanivritti in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada calls it accidental unwanted habits or activities. It's interesting that he chose to call it accidental. So, in the stage of anartanivritti, this is getting rid of the finer particles of dust and dirt that have accumulated. Just like in the cleaning of the Gundicha temple. First they collected the big pebbles and rocks and twigs by hand. And then after collecting those by hand, then they began sweeping, getting the finer dirt. And then after sweeping out the temple, 3 times I think it was, then they proceeded to the water cleansing. And then the cleansing with water got the even finer dirt and dust that the sweeping couldn't get. So the process of anartanivritti is like sweeping the temple of our heart and then beginning to cleanse it with water. And then finally, one reaches a certain point where they become fixed in their service. It's called nishta, where you're fixed in your devotional service. The main difference between anartanivritti and nishta is that within the stage of nishta, one is no longer bewildered by the temptations of maya. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that in nishta, material desires will still be there. However, you're no longer fooled by the enticements of maya, so you no longer fall down to those activities anymore, even though the desires are present within the heart. That's what it means to be fixed. You know what's right, you know what you need to do, and you no longer indulge the material modes and their accompanied material desires. And then from nishta progresses ruchi. Eventually you start getting some taste in your Krishna consciousness. And with ruchi, it's actually a constant taste. Now sometimes when we're in a lower stage, we'll be given a sneak preview or a sample of what a higher stage is like. Sometimes we may be doing our service and we'll get this incredible, amazing taste in that service, but then it goes away. And that's to encourage us to keep trying, to keep progressing further, to show us that yes, there is still more to come. So in the state of ruchi, there's this incredible taste where every single thing that you do that's related to Krishna brings so much bliss. And you just feel so excited and so happy to do it. You just can't wait to engage in the activity. And as you're engaging in the activity, you're just thinking, wow, this is the most incredible, amazing thing ever. But with ruchi, when you're actually on that stage, it's continuous. It's not where it's just here now and gone the next moment. It's a continuous experience. And then when you have that taste, what's the natural reaction? Naturally, your desire for devotional activities increases, asakti, increasing attachment for devotional activities. And then when your attachment increases to a fevered pitch, it develops into bhava, or ecstasy, where you're in so much bliss and ecstasy that you're practically crying at all moments. You know, the devotional ecstasies that you're experiencing can actually get in the way of your service, to where you may even pray to Krishna to put aside your tears of joy so you can continue serving him. And it's also described in the Nectar Devotion that this stage of bhava, or ecstasy, is like when the sun is rising, but it hasn't risen yet over the horizon. But it's risen to the point to where it's changing the sky all these amazing, wonderful colors. And then prema is like the rising of the full rising of the sun, illuminating everything. In the stage of prema, there's no longer any chance of fall down. All the way up to the stage of bhava, there's still the chance of falling down, as exemplified by Bharat Maharaj. When he became attached to that deer, he was in the stage of bhava. But still, because somehow or other he got attached, developed material attachment for this animal, this deer, he fell down from that position and he had to try again in another lifetime. But once one achieves the platform of prema, there's no longer any question of fall down. It's impossible. Because at the stage of prema, the transcendental sun of pure love for Krishna has risen within the heart, eradicating any darkness of ignorance. And there's no longer any chance of falling down from that platform. So this is the state that Prahlad Maharaj was in. He was in the fully manifest stage of pure love for God. And so also within this division of, within this stage of progress, there's different divisions. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that the stage of Vaidhisadhana Bhakti encompasses from Adavashrada, from the beginning of faith, all the way through all the way through Nishta. At Nishta, it can transform into Raganuga Bhakti. Not always, because not all devotees make it to Raganuga. Raganuga Bhakti is specifically for those devotees that are going to Goloka Vrindavan to be with Krishna. The devotees going to the regular Vaikuntha Loka planets, they stay in Vaidhisadhana Bhakti until they develop bhava. This is explained in the Nectar of Devotion. And then they go to the Vaikuntha planets with this mood of awe and reverence to serve Vishnu there in the Vaikuntha Lokas. But it's interesting, because in the stage of Nishta, on the stage of Nishta, one achieves the state of Brahma-Bhuta. It's the stage where you're liberated, and you think of yourself as an eternal servant of the Lord. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur actually gives quite an amazing and actually pretty heavy reference in regard to Vaidhisadhana Bhakti. He says that the practice of Vaidhisadhana Bhakti is for those who have no love for Krishna. Which is pretty incredible if you think about it. That's a very profound statement. Now, the difference between Vaidhisadhana Bhakti and the higher stages, the higher states of love for Krishna, it's like, I've given the example before, it's like push starting a manual transmission vehicle. I don't know if anyone's ever actually tried this. I have. You just put the vehicle into first gear, and you get a couple strong guys behind you, and they push the car. And by pushing the car, since it's in gear, it's turning the engine. And then once the engine turns enough, eventually the pistons are going to compress enough and it's going to spontaneously ignite, and then the engine will start. So in the beginning stage of devotional service, it's simply going through the motions. there is no actual feelings of love for Krishna within your heart. Intellectually, you may know it the right thing to do. You may know it to be the right thing to do. And you may understand the necessity for it. And other people may convince you, oh yes, this is proper, and really this leads to the ultimate perfection of life. But in the stage of Vaidhisadhana Bhakti, it's just that. It's all either a mental or intellectual understanding of it. There is no actual feeling of love for Krishna within the heart manifest at that point. So what needs to happen is we need to go through the motions enough. And once we've gone through the mechanical motions, then eventually we'll begin to feel the first twinges of love for Krishna within our heart. And that begins right at the transition stage of nishtha to ruchi. That's when we first start feeling these transcendental emotions of love for Krishna on a continual basis. Even when we're in the lower stages of Bhajana Kriya and Anartana Vritti, we may get a glimpse, we may get a taste of what love for Krishna feels like, but it's simply that, it's just a taste to propel us forward. So Krishna mentions this also in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, verses 6 through 12, where Arjuna is asking him, what's better? Is it better to worship you in the form of impersonal Brahman, or is it better to worship you in your personal feature? And so Krishna says, it's better to worship me in my personal feature. And he says, those that try to worship me in my impersonal manifestation will find that path very difficult to proceed upon. And then in verse 6, he says, but those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, being devoted to me without deviation, engage in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having their minds fixed upon me, O son of Pritha, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Text 7. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always, without a doubt. So this is describing higher levels of Krishna consciousness. It's really not possible to constantly be thinking and meditating upon Krishna while we're still struggling with material desires. If we're still in the stages of Anartana Vritti or Bhajana Kriya, we can't continuously be thinking about Krishna because we're still struggling with our own material desires. We're still meditating on various things in this material world that we either want to achieve or experience or have. But once we go beyond that, once we reach the point of nishtha, then our intelligence is fixed. Just like Krishna says here, engage all your intelligence in me. That begins in the stage of nishtha and it just progresses from there. So this is the ideal goal, and this is what Krishna is prescribing. But Krishna is also very practical. He understands that not everyone will be able to come to the highest point. So Krishna says in text 8, my dear Arjuna, winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. So now Krishna is prescribing Vaidhisadhana Bhakti. He's saying, first, if you can't do this, if you can't spontaneously and continuously think of me and meditate upon me and invest your intelligence in me, if you can't do that, then do the next best thing. The next best thing being Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. By following the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. And then Krishna goes further to say, if you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, so this is text 9, then just try to work for me. Because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. And Krishna says, if, however, text 10, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I'm sorry, the last one is 10, this one's 11. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act, giving up all the results of your work, and try to be self-situated. In other words, if you can't work for me, then at least work without being attached to the results of your activities. At least just be detached from what it is that you're doing. Then in text 12, Krishna says, if you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation, and better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action, for by such renunciation one can attain peace of mind. So Krishna here, he's covering all different levels. He's saying if you can't even be detached from what it is that you're doing, at least try to cultivate a little bit of knowledge. At least try to understand what the goal of life is. At least try to understand through knowledge how being attached to your activities is a fruitless activity, is useless. So, in other words, what Krishna is saying, he's saying if you can't directly love me, then at least follow the restrictions, the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga. If you can't follow those rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga, at least work for me. Go through the motions. So, while we're engaging under the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga, we're literally going through the motions. We're still doing the same activities that someone would be doing when they have that spontaneous love for Krishna within their heart. But yet, we don't have that love for Krishna within our heart. So we're simply going through the motions. In one sense, we're faking it. And by going through the motions enough, by imitating the activities of great souls enough, eventually the real sentiment, those real emotions for Krishna will manifest within our heart. And this is what Krishna is telling us. Krishna says, if you cannot fix your mind without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. So by imitating, by going through the motions, eventually the real thing will manifest. Prabhupada has explained that imitation of a good thing is a good thing. So this is how real love for Krishna is practically achieved for everyone. Because not everyone gets the mercy of Narada Muni while they're within the womb. You know, not everyone gets kripa siddha, gets perfection through mercy. And not everyone is nitya siddha. Not everyone is eternally perfect. Some great souls come down to this material world as nitya siddha. For most people, they have to rely upon the process of sadhana siddha. Achieving perfection through the rules and regulations, through the daily practice of sadhana. And so by practicing this, eventually we'll come to the real thing. It's explained that this process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is like a shadow of real bhakti, of Raganuga Bhakti. So even though it's the shadow, at least it still indicates that the real thing is there. And eventually we will achieve the perfection of existence. So it's running late. I think I'll stop there if there's any comments or questions. Brigupati Puru? What was that? I guess just wait until your next birth. you could eat some prasad. And that will, you know, prasadam is actually really nice. Because prasadam is a universal way of preaching and purification. Because people don't have to understand what it is. People don't have to understand that this is the transcendental mercy of the Lord. Although if they do understand that, they'll get infinitely greater benefit. But if they don't understand that, they'll still get some benefit and they'll still get purified. I think... Yeshwar Dev, Archita, and then Amala Bhakta.
Thank you, Prabhu, for an informative class. Prabhu, I just heard this incredible story from Archita on Saturday about Hari story and the ecstasies and his duty. Could you tell that story again?
I didn't
tell. Yeah, you did. You told me outside. He told me the story about how Hari Sori Prabhu was coming into the airport with Srila Prabhupada, and all the devotees were jumping in ecstasy and yelling.
Oh,
and whatnot.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry, who was that? Shruta Kirti. Excuse me. Can you tell it?
Yeah, well, this is well known. Bring the volume down just a little bit. The first slider, not the red one. The first slider on the left. Yeah, bring it down a bit. That's good. Everybody, it's Srila Kirti tells us in his memoirs, everybody knows, that when he would travel to Srila Prabhupada, and wherever he went, he would see the devotees, how they would just practically swoon in ecstasy when they would see Srila Prabhupada. So he mentioned to Srila Prabhupada that he was feeling a little disturbed that he doesn't display those kind of symptoms. He felt that he didn't have love for Srila Prabhupada the way his other disciples did. So Srila Prabhupada didn't respond immediately. And then after some time he called him and he said, "Do you like serving me? Do you like the service that you do?" And he said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." And Srila Prabhupada said, that's love. That's love. In other words, love doesn't have to be worn on the sleeve. Committing to service to Krishna for the pleasure of the Guru and Krishna, that's love. Or at least the beginnings of the deepest love. So, I just wanted to originally just say something about what Brigapati said. He said, what if you can't, you know, even cultivate knowledge, and then you mentioned prasadam. So that comes by the mercy of the devotees. That's why preaching is so important. This is Agyata Sukriti. When we go out to preach, we're spreading Agyata Sukriti. We're giving people unknowing and even unwilling benefit. Even those who cover their ears, by the time they cover their ears, it's too late. They've heard Hare Krishna and their spiritual life has begun. Or if they are fortunate enough to get some prasadam, any way they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, their spiritual life begins. So that's why preaching is so important. Even if you're totally uncommitted, don't care, like on Friday night when we were in Santa Monica, this young man, drunk as a skunk with two girls, came upon the Harinam and just spontaneously started to dance. And then I called him over and he bought a book and he swears that he's going to come here. He said, "This is incredible." But he was, you know, drunk. You could smell the alcohol from a mile away. So he was not looking for spiritual life. He was out there trying to have a good time. But he came across the devotees, got a book, danced and chanted, he and his two friends, the two ladies, you remember, they were dancing in a circle, and they all say they're going to come here. So this is the beginning of spiritual life.
Jai. Amala Bhakta Prabhu.
Thank you for a nice analysis of the beginning to the end. You had mentioned that it's a good thing to imitate the activities of an advanced devotee, because eventually such imitation, by the very nature of it being in goodness or pure goodness, it gradually grows into that. Mm-hmm. Because if you imitate somebody who's in ignorance, for example, drinking alcohol or taking drugs, then you will gradually become a drug addict. It's basically the same principle. But the one thing that every devotee has to be very careful of, when we imitate a great devotee and go through the same motions that he's going through, is to the difference between knowing that you're imitating and then slowly but gradually believing that you are becoming a great devotee when you're still imitating.
Yeah.
This is very important, and therefore one has to have a little bit of self-doubt. Self-doubt is a good thing, because it's an expression of humility. Who am I to be able to think that I'm on such a high, advanced platform when just a few years ago, or even maybe a few months ago, I've been in dragging myself through the gutters of sinful activity? So having some self-doubt, a slight amount, is good, because then one will pray to the Lord to please enlighten him. And that enlightenment will gradually manifest. And as the enlightenment manifests, one can actually see the difference between when he began the imitation and what he's actually experiencing at this particular point in time. It's not only something external, but it's something internal now.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I wanted to make sure. So we have to be very careful to always know when we are being external, and don't think it's internal.
Yeah.
Don't sell yourself a bill of goods that don't exist, so to speak.
Yeah, thank you. That's an extremely important point, which is why on this path of bhakti yoga, one of the most important things is that everyone learns to be, I like to say, brutally honest with yourself. You have to be so honest with yourself that it hurts. You have to be willing to say, yes, I have these things going on in my heart. You can't lie to yourself. You can very easily lie to the public and put on a good show and make everyone believe externally that you are some like advanced pure devotee. But internally, if you're honest with yourself, just look at your heart and what's actually going on in there. And with that sort of honesty, or as you said, that self-doubt, then you can truly evaluate where you are and how you're progressing in your Krishna consciousness. Thank you.
Jai Granth Sahib Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Srila Prabhupada ki jai.